Bonjour and welcome. This is the statewide conversation with Minnesota state officials on COVID-19. It's brought to you by the Ampers Network of Radio Stations. I'm Heidi Holton. I am live from the KEXE studios on the rainy banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We thank you so much for tuning in today. We've got Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan joining us again. She'll help us understand the week in state politics and where we're at in terms of COVID-19 and answer your questions that came in from listeners around the state. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question, email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895 and leave a message. This conversation, a collaboration of Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Lieutenant Governor, thanks again for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we've got a lot to get to today. I want to learn about the mobile vaccine clinics you've got going and students and sports and testing. But first, last week was a big week. This week was no different. Complicated with the guilty verdict at the Chauvin trial, the funeral of Dante Wright. I wonder if we can kind of start there.
Sure. I know that everyone in Minnesota is reeling. I don't think that anything could have prepared us for the last couple of weeks in our state. To be really honest with you, Heidi, I was not expecting a guilty verdict on all three counts because for so long we have not seen any glimmer of justice in cases like this one with George Floyd. So I am assuming that many folks across the state felt what I felt, which was relieved. And I felt like we could collectively take a deep breath all together in a way that we just couldn't for over a year. But I think it's important to remember that this particular case and the conviction of Derek Chauvin in the murder of George Floyd is just a first step. It is not equal justice. It is a first step towards a state and a country that is a safe place for everyone. And you know, yesterday, I was humbled to be able to be at the funeral for Dante Wright. And I watched his mom say impossible things about losing her child. And also sat directly behind Dante Wright Jr., who is not yet 2 years old. So that is, you know, what I am carrying right now is to try to determine how we can, every single one of us, you know, in my role as Lieutenant Governor, but also just my role as a mom, how do we change the trajectory of the state so that Dante Wright Jr. has a different outcome and we change the conditions. So we changed the conditions for him and his life and other children like him as well. So it's all been very, very heavy, and people are crying out for justice, and we need to hear those cries, every single Minnesotan, every one of us. Transitioning to mobile vaccine, I'm super excited about this project. So the Department of Health and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota and Metro Transit and the Met Council and the Department of Transportation all work together to bring these mobile vaccination clinics to communities across Minnesota. So there's two mobile vaccination units that will begin offering clinics this week, and then we will scale up to six buses by the summer. So, you know, I think the coolest part of this is that these buses are going to be focused on, you know, highly targeted vaccine distribution strategy, connecting folks to vaccines in a place in their community or with a trusted community partner or community clinic, you know, to try to remove as many obstacles as possible where they can feel comfortable and there's credible messengers around them talking about the need to be vaccinated, but also answer any questions or concerns that they might have. And, you know, the really important thing to remember is that all COVID-19 vaccine is free. Any kind of identification, proof of citizenship, and insurance is not required. All of the buses themselves are ADA accessible, and each bus is prepared to vaccinate around 100 people each day, depending on travel time. So we are in this moment as more and more people are being vaccinated of trying to figure out how to remove those obstacles for folks getting the vaccine and bringing vaccinations directly to the people is something that I'm super excited about and, you know, hope that, that Minnesotans are excited about too. It's a good way to, you know, to connect with the community and is good community organizing practices of bringing what people need directly to them.
Well, and you said that, you know, the transition from our topics right there, but they're not, they're related still. You know, you're talking about these obstacles. And I think for someone listening to us right now who, you know, maybe is a month past their second dose and they were able to get it in their community, those obstacles may not be as apparent. So what do you mean specifically about that? You talked about economics, about the place, but what are obstacles that stand in the way of people getting vaccines?
Transportation, certainly being a really important piece, through removing that obstacle. If people are, you know, working every day and the time when they are, you know, available to get their vaccine, it doesn't line up, right, with their work schedule is another part of it. So trying to be flexible there, I think is important. Generally, just having a hesitancy around medical care in general can sometimes be that obstacle. We've heard a lot of people say, you know, oh, well, just, you know, contact your physician or your regular doctor. There are a whole host of Minnesotans who don't have a regular doctor, right, or a regular clinic or place where they get their care, but maybe they feel comfortable when they go to the Hallie Q. Brown Center. Because, you know, that's a place where the community gathers, where they meet, where they've also been connected to either, you know, childcare or the food shelf or for other things. So it's just, you know, we're trying to make people feel comfortable. So I think that's a really good point, Heidi. There's some folks, you know, I am now fully vaxxed and, you know, it's not as though now it's like easy breezy, we're good to go. There's more people who need it, and we need to be thinking about those folks too.
Yeah, I hope so. I am fully vaxxed too. We're the same date, oddly. Mm-hmm. Have you hugged your mom? Have you gotten to eat with her?
That is this Sunday.
Good
time at grandma's house. So we're excited. And the other day, I hugged some people who are also fully vaccinated, and I realized, like, I have not hugged anybody who's not the size of an 8-year-old or my husband, who is 6'3". So, like, that's, you know.
Yeah.
That's it. So, but, yeah, there. I think, you know, that's a good point, Heidi, that the inequities in Minnesota that permeate our justice system also permeates, right, our health access system and transportation and access to jobs and childcare. It is everywhere. And so we need to use that lens of equity, but back it up, frankly. It can't just be talk as we're working towards solutions here.
Well, let's kind of stay on this tough topic here. We heard from Casey this week, and she said when comparing job requirements for being a police officer in my community to the requirements for being a school teacher in my community, I find it alarming that the level of schooling is minimal for police officers, yet they are rarely held accountable like school teachers can be. These are both publicly funded roles we need in our communities. What do you think in the difference? What do you think about the difference in how they are treated?
So I think this question is spot on. And I am grateful for just such a thoughtful perspective. You know, in the same way that teachers are licensed, police officers also have a licensing body that oversees the profession. And it's called the Minnesota Police Officers or the Minnesota Peace Officers Standards and Training Board, or is also shorthand known as the Post Board. So for decades in Minnesota, the Post Board has been dominated by those it regulates. It's been a predominantly white male board with a vast majority of the folks who are serving on it from law enforcement perspective. And that has changed. And, you know, you may not see the work move overnight, but it is happening. Just in February, the governor had an opportunity to appoint 7 new leaders to the Post Board. So those individuals represent the Black community, the Native community, the victim and survivor coalitions, and the disability community, and additional experts who are, you know, on holding accountable the kind of training we provide our officers and what outcomes that training produces. And I'm proud of the fact that the Post Board now looks radically different than when we took office. These appointees bring unique areas of expertise and immense passion for reform to the Post Board. And in fact, their first meeting of this new Post Board was just yesterday. So they have already shown their capacity to move the board in a new direction, and one that pushes the previous limits of what we have seen and how we license peace officers in Minnesota. And there are 2 important developments that happened yesterday. A proposal was successfully moved to require the development of a model policy around First Amendment demonstration response. And more importantly, began the work of how officers will be held accountable for violations of that policy. You know, law enforcement has the dual responsibility to preserve public safety and protect the constitutional right to demonstrate. And we've seen that far too often that balance is not approached in a uniform way across police departments. And it is a problem. And then a proposal, which frankly, seems pretty like a no-brainer to me, that was tried to be moved in the Senate, but the Post Board got it done yesterday, is there is a proposal requiring a policy to ban officer involvement in extremist groups, including white supremacy groups. That was also advanced yesterday. You know, extremist ideology is at odds with law enforcement professionals' basic responsibility to protect and serve everyone. And so that's also an important development. So moving towards a more uniform standards and accountability for law enforcement, you know, our communities deserve that. And our police officers deserve it too. Creating more trust, accountability, and transparency in the profession is something that every single Minnesotan deserves.
We had another question from Casey, and she said, I heard a recent interview with the Bemidji Chief of Police, and he was asked if there might be a way to determine implicit biases when hiring police officers. He said it's not possible. I've also read recently that the Grand Rapids Police Chief has said that we don't see color. I'm not assuming all police officers are alike, that they're all bad or that they're all good. What do you think about how the policing could look at bias and racism differently?
Sure. Oof. So, you know, of course there are ways to test for implicit bias. But, you know, the important question for constituents and voters is who is ensuring that the police departments are taking the issue seriously? The reality is that law enforcement agencies are overseen in the most direct way by their governing bodies. So for police departments, that's your city council and in some cases your mayor. And for sheriff departments, they are elected directly by voters and funded by your county commissioners. I know that Minnesotans are hungry to see real change in how these departments are performing, how they're hiring, how they train their officers or require body cameras or take public complaints of misconduct. This is a conversation that we all need to start having with our local elected officials. We are certainly taking the lead in our administration with regards to the post board and working in partnership with the legislature, in particular to pass the policing accountability and reforms that are contained in the House Public Safety Bill that they passed 2 days ago. That is what we are pushing for. But there's also this level of accountability to folks and to voters with their local bodies as well. And, as an Indigenous woman, when I hear leaders say, "I don't see color," what that actually translates to is, "I don't see you. I don't see you and your experiences, your background, and all the things that make you who you are as a whole person." And we have moved far beyond that, Minnesota. We are in a place for being colorblind, or potentially saying that we are colorblind, is causing deep, deep damage to our state as a whole. And we have to be courageous and uncomfortable enough to have these conversations, but then take action and move policy forward. It is overdue, and we see the consequences of not seeing people as their whole selves and whole communities in the kind of outcomes that we have across the state, across all of those areas that I talked about earlier.
You are listening to the statewide conversation on COVID-19 and what's been happening in the state of Minnesota with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. You can send your questions to COVID@ampers.org. You've told us before about your background in community, and you probably didn't begin your career as Lieutenant Governor. You've done a lot of things locally and sort of grassroots. And I think what you just said there is really important, because everybody can get involved on a local level that could really see some change in their communities.
That's right. I mean, the way that I started doing this work, Heidi, was honestly, I was a youth worker at a nonprofit organization in the Twin Cities and worked with American Indian children and their families. And I wanted our elected officials to know what was happening in our communities and what was happening specifically with our kiddos and school. So I literally asked every single person, like elected official, who somehow touched our community, the city council, the state representatives and state senators, and just ask people to have coffee with me or meet with me. And I was surprised by the number of people who actually said yes. So, that created an opportunity to try to move some of the policies and investments that were important to my community. And so I would just say, I started off as a scrappy youth worker who just wanted people to know about my kids that I worked with every day. And we all have a super important perspective and narrative to share. You are an expert in your own life, and your elected officials should hear from you and should hear that perspective, because it helps them do their job better.
Well, let's move back into some of the things coming out from the state. We talked about the buses, the vaccination buses, mobile. Tell us about the campaign, the new one, Roll Up Your Sleeves, Minnesota.
So right now, with our campaign, we are in the moment where, we're just talking about organizing, Heidi, and letting people know what's happening. For us, I think we hear a lot about get out the vote around election time or GOTV, and now we're talking about get out the vaccine, and that's also GOTV, right? We need the majority of Minnesotans to be vaccinated. And so, right now we are focused on, everybody is eligible, but we're targeting manufacturing workers right now. And the campaign kicked off with the food service industry employees, and in the coming weeks, workers in other priority frontline sectors will be vaccinated at community vaccination sites. So we know that to keep Minnesota's economy afloat over the past year and produce the goods that Minnesotans and Americans rely on, we retooled the assembly lines and work environments to create safer workplaces for over 324,000 collective employees who are part of Minnesota's manufacturing sector. So we've been driving manufacturing workers to sign up for the vaccine connector and get vaccinated. Department of Agriculture Commissioner Tom Peterson recently traveled to Post Consumer Brands in Northfield to attend a Rice County Public Health vaccination pop-up site at the food manufacturer's facility. And Commissioner Grove has also attended a roundtable discussion with several manufacturing companies at Anderson Windows and Cottage Grove. So we're trying to do things online. We're trying to do things through the actual companies themselves with visits, and really just want people to know it is time. And, you know, one of the best ways that we can get back to better and get off this train is to make sure that people are getting vaccinated. So that's the campaign. And, you know, we're just trying to connect with people and, you know, using multiple tactics in the manufacturing sector this week.
Let's talk about the importance of testing. There is still community spread. It's increasing. It's with younger people. That kind of plays into some of the new guidelines that came out having to do with schools and sports. I know it's a confusing area for folks, but tell us what the state recommends in terms of testing your kids and what kids playing outside should be doing mask-wise.
So right now, you know, our guidance is that we are pushing families to get tested as much as possible. My daughter gets tested every 2 weeks, and that's important both for our overall, you know, peace of mind, but also commitment that we've made to our own community and our own school community has been really important. We're pushing testing for youth sports as well. And so masking guidance has also changed too, which is that masks are required when athletes are not actively practicing, and masks are strongly recommended when actively practicing or weekly testing is strongly recommended. So, you know, this is what we are encouraging families to do. We know that we also have been working really intentionally with our schools as well to provide additional options for students to get tested. At my daughter's school, for example, they can sign up for the saliva tests online and then have an opportunity to drop off those tests at the school if they can't get to a UPS drop box. So we're trying to do this as much as possible. But to your point, there is, you know, community spread is an issue. And so testing our young people who, if they are under the age of 16, can't yet get vaccinated, this matters tremendously. And this is one of the most important tools in our toolbox is for folks to get tested. You can get tested at home, and you can also, you know, get tested at local sites in the community. We are not lacking in opportunities for folks to get tested in Minnesota.
We heard from a listener this week who said, "I don't understand why a fully vaccinated person still has to wear a mask. If the vaccines are working, people are not getting sick, then they cannot spread COVID, right?"
So I understand how that can be frustrating, but when we've asked Minnesotans to mask up, we've always asked that you do so to protect people around you. So there has been super promising data to suggest that vaccination protects against asymptomatic disease, but we still recommend that you mask when interacting with unvaccinated people. You know, keep in mind that vaccines are still highly effective, but they are not 100% effective. So a vaccinated person could still unwittingly develop COVID-19 and pass it on to others. A vast majority of the population needs to be fully vaccinated, and we need to see a significant reduction in disease transmission before masking and social distancing precautions can be lifted. These these measures continue to be in place to protect the large number of people who remain unvaccinated, and again, including children. So if you're in a small group and the other people that you're with are fully vaccinated, it is low risk to forgo the masks and social distancing. Soon we will all get there, but that's why. That is why. Until we have the majority of Minnesotans vaccinated, we're going to need to keep wearing these masks. And I know it's a drag, but you got to keep it up.
Another question from a listener this week. After more than a year of dealing with the pandemic, I am exhausted. We have all been through so much. I get that some folks who have lost loved ones or lost jobs, that things are much worse. But I just have to say, I'm just so tired of this. I'm sure the police trial, the killing of Dante Wright, is also weighing on me, as it is for so many. Do you have any suggestions for how to recharge our batteries? I know we are through with the pandemic. And we are not through with pandemic or the racial strife, but personally, and this was in all caps, I am so done.
I feel that. It has been trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma. And every morning when I wake up, especially over the last 2 weeks or so, I'm like, sort of sit straight up in bed and take a deep breath. And, I'm a little rattled, because that is just what we have all been going through. I feel like we've talked a lot about self-care, but after the year that we've had, it feels like bath bombs and, long walks over your lunch break aren't quite doing it anymore. So I would just say that I think one of the things that has been really important, at least for me this week, has been connection. I have called people who I haven't talked to in a very long time just to check in. There's no agenda. It was just to talk. And that has made a big difference for me. And I think to check in with why I did that is because I sort of checked in with myself. And I was like, who am I missing? Who do I need right now? And that was important. The other thing that I'll tell you that I'm really excited about is just the ability to laugh. There's a show that came out just yesterday called Rutherford Falls, which is on Peacock, and it is the first time there has been a Native American woman as a lead in a sitcom. And so I am very excited to watch that. It sounds silly that I've been looking forward to a TV show, but it's just a place where we can laugh. There's some representation in a way that we just haven't seen before, and I'm excited about that. But I also am over it, and I have been part of, over the last week as well, some healing, even just online conversations, remembering to breathe collectively with other people who are also hurting, and just remembering that any place that we go together as Minnesotans, as we are emerging from this really deep trauma, it's going to require healing. And that means personal healing. That means healing as communities and as a state. And that you can feel like you're so done. And that's okay. And you can just exist in that for a while. And then figure out what you need in order to be able to continue moving forward. And for me, it has been laughter and friends. And remembering to drink water, which sounds silly, but it really is, right? It's our first medicine. Yeah. It's one of the best ways that we can take care of ourselves.
I really liked what you said there about thinking about the people that you needed to connect with. It echoes what we've been hearing from these focus groups we've been doing with strong women in northern Minnesota, and them realizing they don't have to connect with everybody they used to connect with that didn't lift up their lives, but they're choosing. They're spending time thinking about, who do I need to talk to? What do I need to do? Who am I now after this last 14 months?
Yeah.
I just think it's really important.
That's right. Yeah, and you don't have to. It's important too. Like, you don't have to talk to everybody, right? Like, I think that was one of the things that we are moving.
Yeah.
Away from is like, what does it mean for me to like really cultivate the kind of community and people that I need in this moment and that I need as this person 14 months later? That's super powerful. I'm eager to have that conversation too.
It's Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. We thank you so much for your time today. Stay safe.
Thanks, Heidi. Take good care. Have a good weekend.
You too. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state through AMPR's Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, as well as the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation at KEXE.org, or if you would like to ask a question, email COVID@AMPRS.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KEXE, KBXE. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.